Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to take on the best way of staying healthy and living a longer life, always with peer-reviewed literature. To support it, then we're going to look at the series we started on fascism in America. And on a regular weekly basis, we'll be presenting some of the best insights on how we're becoming a police state. 3 years ago, when I first brought this up, that we were, at that time, a police state, we didn't have the revelations of the National Security Agency and Snowden and others. Now we do. Now many articles and editorials are coming out showing this. Today, from Peter Van Buren, Tom Dispatch, you can't opt out of being spied on. You have no choice. The 10 National Security Agency myths are going to be debunked. So the next time you hear one of the apologists in the media or politicians saying, well, you know, it's so you get a little bit of intrusion into your life, but you, hey, we're being made safe. No, you're not. And we'll explain. From Ralph Nader, what we don't know in the information age. From Common Dreams. This is a really short, good piece. Also today, from our public health segment, drugs whose dangerous risks were buried so that Big Pharma could make a bundle of money. Martha Rosenberg from Alternet. You'll be surprised at what they, the government and the pharmaceutical industry, knew about dangerous drugs, but didn't tell you or I until after the fact. Also today, time permitting, we're going to share two different reasons why we should all be letting our legislators know the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a Trojan horse. It should not be approved. It should not be fast-tracked. It has nothing to do with helping us. Just imagine this. Just use common sense for a moment. The President of the United States wants to have this fast-tracked. And Nancy Pelosi, remember, she was the one who said, well, we've got to pass Obamacare to know what's in it. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That's like saying, trust me, buy this car that's behind this door, and then only when you own it will you find out whether or not it really works. And if it doesn't, too bad. No, there's nothing about this. It's been in secret. It's been written by lobbyists and lawyers for the major corporations. And yet we're supposed to think that somehow we trust this person? No, we don't trust him. We don't trust anyone in Congress. We don't trust anybody in power. We don't trust anyone who believes that we should give them the power to make important choices over. We will trust you only when we have independently verified that what you're sharing is accurate and honest in our best interest. So we're going to tell you about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and why it's bad to the bone, and we have to do something about it. And so that's what we have, and I will leave time at the end of our program for talk back. No guest today, because I want to get more of you to be able to call in from around the world. Now, our number to call in from is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and let's begin. Many of you have watched the film Seeds of Death. In fact, on one website, 700,000, and another website, 40,000, we're guesstimating right now that probably 4 or 5 million people have watched the film. We also have seen how many people have downloaded the articles we've written, Richard Gale, myself, as well as posted from other sites, including Jeffrey Smith, about what's wrong with genetically modified foods. But time and again, when the public has been asked to vote, you want your foods labeled if they're genetically engineered, they start off saying yes, but then tens of millions of dollars of ads with all these scientists and spokespersons and celebrities say, we don't want this, it's an intrusion, it's another government such and such, and they vote it down. Well, we looked at the arguments. and we rebut every single argument. So watch the film. It's free. There's a public service. Read the articles. Here's the latest reason why we should have nothing to do with GMOs. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Food Chemistry. The article is titled Compositional Differences in Soybeans on the Market. Glyphosate Accumulates in Roundup Ready GMO Soybeans. Here's what we know. According to Natural News, biotech proponents are fond of proclaiming how little difference there is between two typical crops, one that's genetically engineered and one that's not. All right, researchers from GenoK Center for Biosafety in Norway outright rejected the widespread claim that GMO soybeans are substantially equivalent to non-GMO and soy crops. Why? Because they compared the nutritional makeup and contamination levels of genetically modified and conventional organic varieties of soy. They published their paper in Food Chemistry, and it reveals startling research that examines the significant differences that could be posed by eating genetically modified foods, despite the fact that they might look identical, but they're not. GMO soybeans account for 93% of U.S. and 75% of global soybean crop production. Shockingly, analysis found that genetically modified soybeans, engineered to be tolerant to the herbicide glyphosate, were actually accumulating high levels of residual glyphosate and AMPA, a degradation product of glyphosate, taken up by the plants during the growing season. Now, glyphosate is absorbed throughout the plant, including in both the leaves and the beans. Both toxins have been found to be bioavailable when taken orally or were found in the final market-ready food product, meaning it's going into your body. Now, AMPA, which is an amino methyl phosphonic acid metabolized from Monsanto Roundup Ready glyphosate herbicide, mimics the glutamate neurotransmitter in the body, putting it in a class of substances with potentially excitotoxic effects on neuron receptors in the brain and nervous system. Now, listeners of this program will understand that you don't want to take aspartame. You don't want to take monosodium glutamate, MSG, because the dangers of excitotoxic or overstimulating neurons can induce cell death. Well, that's what this one can also do. So there was all these toxins in the GMO, so it's not identical, and it also doesn't have the same nutrient value. The natural or organic one has much more nutrients. So just one more reason not to trust anything the genetically modified industry says. From Arjun Walia, a study suggests that spirituality is key to kids' happiness. Now, professor of psychology at the University of British Columbia and a group of colleagues have conducted a study which suggests that spirituality is key to children's happiness. Over the past few years, scientists have been able to measure the effect of positive emotions and feelings of joy within our biology. So it is key to find out what best produces these feelings within us. Now, just to be clear, they define spirituality as internal characteristics, an inner belief system that a person relies upon for strength and comfort. Understanding happiness has been subjected to a large number of researches over the years, and this particular one suggests that the processes that influence happiness are not guided by external factors, but by internal characteristics and qualities. They took hundreds of children to assess this, and they just found that those children who were happiest believed in their own life, their own potential. They also were part of the communal, the quality and depth of interpersonal relationships with others. And those were aspects of their spirituality. And those predicted the children's happiness. So let's put this into a very basic concept. How does this influence us? Well, if you're a person that has friends, and you can relate with those friends, and the friends accept you for who you are, that's good. when you can feel good about yourself, that you're okay, no matter what, no matter what circumstances you were born into, no matter what the circumstances that you were raised, you're still okay. That's important. And that no matter what you face, you'll find the strength of character to persevere no matter what. That's okay. That's important. So this is what makes a difference. Now look around you. Look at yourself. How many times in your life have you faced adversity, and instead of crumbling and just falling apart, you said, I may not like how this feels. This is not the best of times in my life. But this is just a bad storm, and I'm going to keep looking for the rainbow on the other side of it. And you get through it. I'll bet that's happened a lot. I'll bet you've been betrayed, you've been lied to, you've been used, you've been manipulated. We all have. But we all don't stay stuck at that moment of betrayal or where someone says something about us or to us that hurts us. We get over it. And then one day, we realize we've gotten over a lot of stuff. We've gone through a lot. And the older you get, the more you go through. And but we're okay. That's that inner spirituality. So we just have to understand that kids need that. They need a sense of who they are. They're okay. They can't live as an extension of our egos. And how many soccer mom and dads want their kids to succeed winning, not because it's good for the kid, but because it's good for the parent. Back to nutrition. Why guavas should be considered a superfood? Now, I grow guavas. There are about 7 different types I grow. One is called the strawberry guava. It grows about the size of a strawberry. It's ready to eat when it's red. And you eat the whole thing. And it has these little tiny chewable seeds inside. Nice sweet strawberry flavor to it, and there are thousands that can grow on a single tree. But most people don't eat guavas, not in our society. They do in Central and South America, very common there. In fact, the first time I saw large guavas in my life was when I was in Cuba. And I'm going down this road, and that in itself in Cuba is a trip, because I wanted to see the entire island, which, by the way, if you put Cuba over California, you wouldn't see California. That's how long and large it is. And much more beautiful, by the way. In fact, Cuba's one of the most beautiful places you've ever seen. Came up over a ridge. And on one side, there were these long falling water falls. I'm going to guess 600, 700, 800 feet. And a whole valley of beautiful, exquisite palm trees. It was just heavenly to see this. And on the other side, it was lush rainforest. And that was at the southern end of the island and near Santiago. And then, you know, as you start to go further, you start to see all different types of little towns, and they all look like they've been bombed. They look like something out of the Balkan Wars. And I kept saying to asking the driver, with all the unemployment here and you have natural resources, why don't you just go in and fix these buildings up? He said, that's not how our body politic works. That's not how it happens. So you just have this blight everywhere where everything's broken down, everything's worn out, everything's old. Yep. But especially the roads. So you zigzag, zigging and zagging. I mean, if you've never been on a ship and got seasick, you would get seasick by being on a road in Cuba. Potholes everywhere. And then they have these trucks that come by that are just regular flatbed trucks that someone welded a metal side on with a little gate in the back. And it's just packed with people. It's boiling hot outside. It's 110 degrees. Everybody's sweating. And the truck has got so many people on it, it's going maybe 10 miles an hour. And then all up the road, you see sitting in little tiny lawn chairs with a little umbrella and people selling buckets of fruit. Now, at that time, they were not allowed to sell any of this, but nobody hassled them because it was small quantities. and it's how they subsidize themselves. So we stopped, and I had a bunch of bottled water, and so I said, I'd like a, and it's literally a bucket. Now, you can't take the bucket, but you can, you know, you have a bag, and you put it in the bag. But it was like a gallon bucket, and it was 25 cents for an entire bucket of guava. And I said, I think you've made a mistake. And he looks, he said, no, that's how much it is. And he had watermelon for 10 cents, a whole watermelon. So I just loaded up the back of the van, so I just really feasted on fruit. Very tasty, very delicious, little watermelon, not kind of whitish, not as not that dark red. And food was very cheap. But the guavas were delicious. Now, these were guavas the size of baseballs, and they were perfection. And so I got some seeds, and I grow those now, and they're delicious. You could grow a guava tree in your backyard. And then in the wintertime, you can protect it by putting about 2 foot of hay on the ground around it and mulch, and then covering it with a freeze cloth. Freeze cloth, if you wrap it once, it will protect the temperature of the plant by 10 degrees. If you put two wraps around a tree or plant, it protects it by about 15 degrees. So if it's 30 outside, it's 45 what the plant is feeling. And you always want a little air. You never want to lay a freeze cloth directly on a plant. If you do that, it'll burn the plant. So you make what's like a little teepee. You put down three poles, and you just wrap the cloth around the poles so the plant can grow year-round. Anyhow, guavas have the highest concentration of antioxidants that protect against cell damage, which we know causes cancer. And there were a series of tests that were published in the peer-reviewed Food Research International Journal that found among fruits in India, including Himalayan apples and pomegranates and bananas and grapes, that the guava, G-U-A-V-A, guava, which was called the poor man's fruit in India, has the highest concentration of antioxidants compared to all the other fruits. So guava are great for you. And in fact, they're loaded with antioxidants, more than plums also. They help lower your blood pressure. They're rich in potassium, richer than a banana. They regulate blood pressure in a good way, can bring it down, and blood sugar. There's high fiber that helps diabetics. And in fact, you'll get out of an average guava, you'll get about 10 to 15 grams of fiber. That's a lot. So if you suffer from constipation, that's a good way of getting some good fiber into your system. And women with fertility problems can eat guava because they contain folate, which contains fertility-promoting properties. Guavas are rich in the B group of vitamins, niacin, also known as B3, promotes good blood circulation, thereby stimulating brain function. Also has B6, which is pyridoxine, helps brain and nerve function. And also manganese, which acts as an enzyme activator, utilizing nutrients like thiamine, biotin, and ascorbic acid. It's good for your eyes. Contains an abundance of vitamin A. It's good for your skin, has vitamin E. And pink guavas contain twice the amount of lycopene as in tomatoes. And even the leaves of guava have medicinal properties. The juice of the leaves is said to provide relief from colds and reduce the formation of mucus and disinfect the respiratory tract. And so that's something that we don't use in our society, and we should. So the nutrient fruit of the day is guava. And finally, even very low levels of lead can impact your child's reading scores. The Center for Disease Control was wrong in its assessment of how much lead is safe for children. Researchers from the University of Maryland recently found that children with blood levels, lead levels ranging from 5 to 9 micrograms per deciliter, for the past 25 years, the CDC has told us that lead levels below 10 is safe. And it's not true. They found that it can be a lot less than that and be toxic. So every parent should have their children tested once every 2 years for heavy metals. It's simple. They can do a hair analysis. It's painless, non-invasive. And then if your child has high lead levels, even considered what is acceptable, you can use therapies to drop those lead levels down. And also, some new research confirms that an Ayurvedic spice is good for the prostate. This is from Case Adams of Green Med Info. And it says that biomedical researchers from Italy's Pescara University have confirmed what recent laboratory research has found, that the Ayurvedic herb turmeric, which we talk about all the time on this program, increases the quality of life and reduces symptoms of non-cancerous enlarged prostates known as benign prostatic hyperplasia. Now, Ayurvedic is a form of medicine, natural medicine, used in India and other countries, and they rely upon a lot of natural seasonings. In this case, for 6 months, the researchers gave patients diagnosed with benign prostatic hyperplasia with turmeric extract of curcumin. And then another group, they gave a medical drug, and they saw that the conclusions, quote, in patients with benign prostate hyperplasia, the addition of the turmeric to the standard treatment contributed to the reduction of signs and symptoms of the disease without causing any significant additional side effects. This pilot experience suggests a potential novel clinical application for curcumin, end quote. So that is good news for people who have enlarged prostate. I'm Gary Knoll. We're sharing information that can make a difference in your life. Now we're going to go directly into the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which I'm very concerned about, and you should be concerned about it. I'm going to share two different short reports. One is from Richard Heinberg of Common Dreams. The other is from Leo Girard from Alternet. First from Richard Heinberg, quote, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, poison for local community reliance. The past couple of decades of globalization have been a disaster for planetary ecosystems and indigenous people and most middle-class citizens, but a gravy train for big investors, investment bankers, and managers of transnational corporations. This unprecedented expansion of international trade was driven by the convergence of key resources, developments, and interventions, meaning cheap oil, satellite communications, container ships, computerized monitoring of inventories, the flourishing of multinational corporations, the proliferation of liberal trade treaties, including NAFTA, and the emergence of transnational bodies like the World Trade Organization. Want to label GMO foods? Sorry, can't do it. Why? That's a barrier to trade. Want local schools to buy healthy food from local farmers? No, can't do that either. That might violate the rights of big agriculture. Hey, surely you want to protect the local forest, right? No, can't do that. You're in the way of profits from logging. That's the reality. If President Obama is able to sell out America, as he's trying, by getting this passed, and then you will no longer recognize America in 5 years. We will have nothing, nothing that we can call our own, because everything then will be under the control of a multinational corporation. And when you fight it, they will have their own insiders, lawyers who work for the big corporations, who will be a non-challengeable final word. You cannot appeal them. Our U.S. Supreme Court, our state courts, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, gone completely. That's the reality of this. And we thank Wikipedia, we thank WikiLeaks for leaking documents yesterday that were picked up by the major press that showed how President Obama himself, with malice aforethought, has sold out the entire environmental movement, because nothing in there is obligatory. It's all voluntary. Well, they're going to pollute all they want, anywhere they want. They will destroy our forests, our waters, our oceans, privatize our water. We will have nothing. We will be a nation of indentured slaves. That's what it means. That's the reality. Now, there will be the apologists, those talking, smirking clowns on MSNBC and other corporate Democrats who will try to say, but there's something here. Let's work with it. No, you don't work with something that's corrupt. Then you become complicit. You reject it completely, if you have any integrity. And we should. Economists said everyone would eventually benefit. They lied. Casualties quickly mounted, inflated adjusted wages for American workers stagnated. Manufacturing towns throughout the Northeast and Midwest withered. Meanwhile, China began burning immense amounts of coal to make mountains of toys, furniture, clothing, toys, tools, appliances, and consumer electronics, cloaking its cities in a pall of toxic fumes and driving its greenhouse gas emissions to world record-setting levels. In effect, the United States has been importing cheap consumer goods while exporting jobs and polluting industries. In both China and the United States, levels of economic inequality have soared. Now comes this completely perverse, totally corrupt Tony Soprano. Wouldn't even have touched this. It is so septic. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, everything about it and everyone associated with it are up to absolutely no good. A new trade deal negotiated in secret. Only corporations that get to contribute looked at the draft. The point of the treaty to double down on globalization at precisely the moment in time when the entire enterprise is beginning to fail as a result of stubbornly high oil prices, worsening climate change impacts. But these people don't care about floods, droughts, wildfires. They don't care about heavy rain, heavy snow, coldest, hottest. They could care less about tornadoes, Category 5, hurricanes. They don't care about debt, inflation, middle-class fears of losing even more ground. They don't care about home foreclosures. They don't care about anything except themselves. The entire text of the leaked Trans-Pacific Partnership is vast, thousands of pages, and it contains little-known provisions that would give companies sweeping powers to sue local governments or entire countries over any law a company deems is an impediment to reaping maximum profits. For example, if a city, county, or state were to ban fracking within its jurisdiction, oil companies could overturn the ban and sue for millions of dollars in lost profits. Want to label GMO foods? Can't do that. Barrier to trade. Want your local schools to buy healthy food? Can't do that. Nope. All this means that you have no rights ever again. We already know that our Congress is corrupt, our White House is corrupt, our Supreme Court is corrupt, our media is corrupt. Most of the darlings of the entertainment industry would be corrupt if they were smart enough to figure out how to be corrupt. They're just dumb as bricks. But be that as it may, this is all corrupt, and we've already seen what kind of country we've become. And if you doubt me, look at our schools, look at our infrastructure, look at the hungry children, look at the home foreclosures, look at the people who put us there, look at their rewards, look at our pain. What does it take to wake a country up? Let your legislator know. No to fast-tracking, no to Trans-Pacific Partnership. If they vote for it, you vote them out of office. You should vote them out of office under any case. This is from Leo Girard, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Fast Track to Poverty. Quote, that giant sucking sound predicted by Russ Perot commenced 20 years ago last week. It is the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, vacuuming up U.S. jobs and depositing in Mexico. Independent presidential candidate Perot was right. NAFTA swept U.S. industry south of the border. It made Wall Street happy. It made multinational corporations obscenely profitable, but it destroyed the lives of hundreds of thousands of American workers. NAFTA's backers promised it would create American jobs, just as promoters of the Korean and Chinese trade agreements said that they would advocate for the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, and they were, and so are, wrong. NAFTA, the Korean deal, China's entry into the World Trade Organization killed American jobs. They lowered wages. They diminished what Americans cherished, opportunity. They contributed to the very ill that President Obama is crusading against, income inequality. There is no evidence that the Trans-Pacific Partnership would be any different. American workers need a new trade philosophy, one that protects them and puts people first, not corporations. After 20 years, Americans know in their guts the damage NAFTA did to them, the destruction it caused to American manufacturing. There's also concrete proof. In a study titled NAFTA 20, released this month, Public Citizens Global Trade Watch concludes, quote, after two decades of NAFTA, the evidence is clear. The vaunted deal failed, as its promises of job creation and better living standards while contributing to mass job losses, soaring income inequality, agricultural instability, corporate attacks on domestic health and environmental safeguards, and mass displacement and volatility in Mexico. It points out that NAFTA snake oil salesmen at the Peterson Institute promised it would create 170,000 jobs a year. Instead, it cost Americans 845,000 jobs. That is the number of manufacturing workers who were able to jump through all the red tape hoops necessary to receive trade adjustment assistance. The trade adjustment assistance after corporations moved their jobs across the border. The study's authors believe hundreds of thousands of additional workers lost their jobs because NAFTA did not qualify for the federal trade adjustment aid. The study also notes that the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics determined that two out of every three displaced manufacturing workers who secured new jobs did so at substantially less wages. In fact, the result is rising income inequality. It happens like this. Workers lose their good-paying factory jobs and take low-paying positions. This increases competition for low-skilled, low-paid jobs that can't be offshored, such as hamburger flipping and shelf stocking. And while a small number of corporate executives and wealthy shareholders profit from moving factories across borders, it forces increasing numbers of workers to be for minimum wage jobs. As a result, income inequality now matches the level it was during the robber baron days before the Great Depression. A study last year by the Nonpartisan Economic Policy Institute supports the public citizens' findings. So what you have is you have lower wages and lower potential for anyone who's got a job and those coming out of college as well. NAFTA also encouraged corporations to abandon the United States. The Public Citizen Report explains, quote, NAFTA created new privileges and protections for foreign investors that incentivized the offshoring of investment and jobs by eliminating many of the risks normally associated with moving production to low-wage countries. Now, what that means in lay language is that the U.S. corporations contribute to a trade deficit by manufacturing in Mexico and importing their products back into America. And before NAFTA, the United States had a small trade surplus with Mexico. Now it has a trade deficit, a huge one. The Korean trade deal, which took effect nearly 2 years ago, is no better. Like NAFTA, its promoters said it would boost exports and create jobs. In its first year, the U.S. exports to Korea fell 8%. Imports from Korea rose, increasing the trade deficit with Korea by 40%. It cost Americans 40,000 jobs. This is not what America wants for trade, and yet the United States is negotiating a NAFTA-style deal called the Trans-Pacific Partnership with 11 Pacific Nation rims, and it'll just mean more American factories shutting down. My thoughts are, this is promoted by three people, Representative David Camp, Senator Orrin Hatch, and Max Baucus. And if you want to know more about Baucus, man, this guy should have been in a 1970s pimp film. I don't know a corporation he'd say no to taking their money. And yet he's the one that Obama selected to be an ambassador. Gee whiz, why am I not surprised? So we should do this. We should say no to the entire Trans-Pacific Partnership. All the unions, unless you've been corrupted, You should join together and force your management of unions to go on general strike. I'd love to see a national general strike. Everyone against this deal and the politicians who support it. Because if you don't protest, the day will come when what you have cherished you won't have. What you take for granted will be gone. This will do more to change the quality of life in America and our future than anything that's ever happened in our American history. This will dwarf the negative effects of the Great Depression. This will be a financial tsunami that you won't be prepared for. Because once it's codified in law, it cannot be undone by our Constitution, by our legislature. It will stay. It will stick. We'll have to be suffering with this for generations to come. No one in American history has done as much damage as this treaty and its supporters. Just remember this. You got to protest. If you don't protest, then you have no right to complain when you get smacked down. And you will be smacked down in a harsh way. I'm Gary Nall, sharing what we need to hear, even if it's not always what we want to hear. We're going to go to calls in a moment, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. But I also want to show you why we should completely dismantle the National Security Agency and all the secret collecting groups. We don't need them all. We're paying. These are all private corporations out there making tons of money for their companies. Many of them are former admirals, generals, people in major departments who then do startup businesses or are hired into existing businesses to feed off the paranoia that somehow, if we don't give all of our freedoms and all of our money to the national security state, that somehow we'll be killed in our bed. Not going to happen. From Peter Van Buren, and while you're calling in, I'll share this with you, and then we'll go to your calls right after this. Our number to call in, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Now, the debate Edward Snowden envisioned when he revealed the extent of the National Security Agency spying on Americans has taken a bad turn. Instead of a careful examination of what the National Security Agency does, whether what it does is legal, what risks it takes for what it gains, and how effective the agency has been in its stated mission of protecting Americans, we increasingly have government officials or retired versions of the same demanding, quite literally, Snowden's head, and then they engage in fear-mongering. So I think it's time for us to take an honest look at their arguments and our challenges to it. First, they say the National Security Agency surveilling us is legal. After all, well, hold on. Did I miss something? Slavery was legal, wasn't it? Yes, it was. At one time in the United States, by the way, apartheid was legal in South Africa. Laws represent what a government and sometimes perhaps even a majority of the people want at a given point in time. They change and are changeable. What once was a potential felony in Colorado is now a tourist draw. Laws manipulated for terrible ends must be challenged when they come into conflict with the fundamental principles and morals of free society. Laws created Nelson Mandela, the terrorist, who the U.S. kept on terrorist watch list until 2008. And laws created Nelson Mandela, the president of South Africa. There's a catch in the issue of legality in the National Security Agency. Few of us can know just what the law is, what happens to you if you shoplift from a store or murder someone in a bar fight. Well, the consequences of these actions are clearly codified, and you can look them up. It is legal to park over there, you think? Well, there'll be a sign that tells you whether or not the rules allow you to do that or not. But how do you know if something is legal when you can never know the facts, never get the information from the national security state? You can. A panel of experts appointed by President Obama to review the Snowden revelations and the National Security Agency's actions had a peek into the issue of legality and promptly raised serious questions, as did one of the two federal courts that recently ruled on some aspects of the issue. If the Obama administration and Justice Department really believed that all the national security activities were legal in a court of law, why not allow them to be tested openly and unambiguously in public? After all, hey, National Security Agency, President Obama, if you have done nothing illegal, then you shouldn't hide anything, should you? They also argue, if I've done nothing wrong, I have nothing to hide. So why should I care about any of this? Well, keep in mind that the definition of wrong can quickly change. And if you don't know what the actual law really is, how can you say you have done nothing wrong? What if you've got nothing to hide? Post your Social Security number and your credit card information online. Leave your curtains open at night. Leave your doors unlocked. Leave your keys in the ignition and see how that sits with you. In a larger sense, however, the very idea that I've got nothing to hide is a distraction. The Fourth Amendment guarantees a right to privacy. The Constitution does not ask if you want or need that right. It grants it to everyone and demands that the government interfere with it only under specific circumstances. The Fourth Amendment came into being because the British use of general warrants in the colonial era, under the law, they could legally search whole groups of people, their possessions, and their papers without having to justify searching any specific person. It was called writs of assistance. These general warrants allowed the king's agents to search anyone anytime, regardless of whether they suspected that person of a crime. The writs were more often used by royal customs agents. An irony, isn't it? The United States fought a revolution, and James Madison wrote the Fourth Amendment against broad government authority to search. Whether you personally do or do not have anything to hide is not a question that should be on the table. It should be almost un-American to even ask it. They also say, but the media says the National Security Agency only collects my phone metadata, so I'm safe. Not true. They collect everything. They have every phone conversation, they have every text mail, they have every photograph, they have everything you've ever done that's electronic, and they have it all in a file specifically for you. They lie. They say, well, we have checks and balances. Really? That's interesting. You mean the Foreign Intelligence and Surveillance Court? Is that the same one that when last year they approved every single one of 1,788 requests and didn't reject a single one? Well, that's objectivity, isn't it? The Patriot Act elevated a once rarely used tool, the National Security Letter, into the mainstream of government practice. The National Security Letters are an extraordinary search procedure that gives the FBI the power to compel the disclosure of customer records held by banks, telephone companies, internet service providers, public libraries, anything. And then you're gagged from telling anyone that you've received it. And last year they gave 15,229 national security letters to gather information on Americans. They don't require any judicial review. There's a built-in gag. But wasn't it National Director of National Intelligence James Clapper directly lying to that check and balance branch of government, Congress, in a public session? Was he held accountable for perjury? No. So much for the rule of law. But I trust President Obama on this. Do you? Do you really? A big hug trust? I'm sure. I can guess what your opinions are on the people that run the Transportation Safety Administration or the Internal Revenue Service. On what basis, then, can you conclude that the National Security Agency or any other part of government is in any way more trustworthy than any other? While the government does not trust you to know what it does, thanks again to the Snowden revelations, we know that the National Security Agency trusts some foreign governments more than others. The National Security Agency already sharing at least some of the data about Americans with the British and Israelis. Why should the Israeli government know anything about me or you? They shouldn't. And what should we know about them? Everything. And what do we know? Nothing. Do you really trust all of them all the time to never make mistakes or act on personal grudges or political biases? History is too clear. Remember that complete pervert, total scumbag, J. Edgar Hoover? Remember him? A man who should never have been in power. he used people's personal information. He collected on presidents, Supreme Court members, congressional representatives, Martin Luther King, and others in the civil rights movement. Among other things, he used his security, obtained information to outgame members of government. As for the NSA, so far it hasn't even been willing to answer the question on whether it's been spying on or surveilling on members of Congress. And finally, but don't private companies like Facebook already have access to and share a lot of my personal data? Yeah, they do. And private companies can pass your private information to the government, either willingly or under secret compulsion. At least in theory, it's your choice to give data to private companies, but they're marketing it, they're selling it, they're trading it, and all without your knowledge. So just remember, we have people like J. Edgar Hoover, Senator Joseph McCarthy, and many others who made the choice to share what they know about people. And then we had the Church Committee in 1976. The first and only large-scale review of American internal spy networks found that between 1953 and 1973, nearly a quarter of a million first-class letters were opened and photographed in the United States by the CIA. All illegal. Anyone suffer? No. No one went to jail. No one was found guilty. Like the National Security Agency, it was at a time officially forbidden to spy on Americans domestically. It nonetheless produced a computerized index of nearly 1.5 million names. So, they've been spying on us all along. And just in the Vietnam era alone, there were 300,000 individuals who were against the war who were indexed in the CIA computer system. And so they were looking at you, and they were thinking you were a terrorist. I'm Gary Knoll, and that's the issue of the day. By the way, from the environment, rising seas and sinking coast spell doom for the eastern United States. Who's saying this? This is being said by a group of scientists, quote, the devastating impact of global warming-induced sea level rise has become increasingly clear as powerful surges, coastal flooding, and rapid erosion are more and more frequently wreaking havoc along the eastern seaboard of the United States. A new report published yesterday in the New York Times explains that as the waters continue to rise, the land along the east coast is also sinking, spelling disaster for coastal companies. Communities. Accumulating scientific evidence suggests that the East Coast, quote, will be a global hotspot for rising sea level over the coming years. You bet. So that is really serious. That's just, again, it's going to be happening in the near future. So just think about where you want to live. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment to take your calls. Please stay with us. 888-874-4888. But what I'm going to do now is I'm going to just take one quick break to share insights on one of our products, and it's on special for you. This is one of the best of the best. This is one of my top three. I have it with me when I travel. I have it right now because I rely upon it. I remember when I went down to the Dominican Republic, I took my brothers with me, and I took some friends. We wanted to see where does all this aloe come from. And there up in the high mountains of the Dominican Republic in what looked like a desert scape, moonscape, was this huge aloe farm. And they were putting enormous amounts of banned pesticides, DDT, on the crops. Some photographs that were on my website. And I had to take them clandestinely. And then they would take all that old aloe and rotten aloe into a giant airplane. It looked like an airplane hangar. And then they'd souffle it. Take the skin off and throw it in a barrel and put in some chemicals and then ship it off to the United States where it would be processed and have an American label on it. Oh, you know, packaged in wherever. And you thought you were buying something healthy. You weren't. My aloe, different. Grown in the United States in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, certified organic. The highest rating you can get from the International Aloe Research Council. Certified kosher, Circle K kosher, the rabbis there. We take only hand-cut aloe of the maximum beneficial. Of all the different varieties of aloe, we use the best. It's irrigated with natural rainwater. And I even have a video of this that we took so you see every step of it. The whole skin, the whole leaf is used because there are mucopolysaccharides in the skin that I want. We take the alanine out, filter it out, so you get the best of the best of all the power of the aloe, and then we add in ginseng, gota cola, wild yam, ginger, Siberian ginseng, and peppermint extracts or orange extracts, and then you have the best tasting, most pure, powerful, tested for potency aloe that I know. Four independent labs all check on it, and then it's ready to go. It's called Heavenly Aloe. It's the whole leaf organic aloe vera, either natural orange. It's the natural orange. And now here's the number you're going to call because you're going to get a special deal on it. The deal, and I'm going to give you the 877. It's 877-627-5065. Call because you're going to get very special price on this Heavenly Aloe. Everyone should be having it every day. I suggest you take one tablespoon in the morning and one tablespoon in the evening and put it into your beverage or just drink it down. Tastes great. Now, what I don't do with any product, I don't tell you what it does, but you could look up all the things that whole leaf aloe vera organically grown does on Google and the different scientific papers. There's a lot of scientific papers on aloe vera. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And there's a great special today. You're saving $30. All right, you're only paying $47.99. Big savings on whole aloe vera. It's aloe vera. The drink comes in a big container and 33 ounces. It's organic, tastes great, and has everything in it that you want. All right, go there now. Now, let's say hello to some of our listeners. Let's say hello to Tim from New Jersey. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I wanted to mention something about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but I found this chart that I have that refers to the water availability for the planet. We've got 97% is saline in the oceans, and then 3% is going to be fresh water. Nearly 69% of that fresh water is in the glaciers, to give everyone an idea of what volume we're talking about.
Right. And what's happening that's important with this Trans-Pacific Partnership is that if this gets signed, watch how quickly that they take over water supply of the American people. So you are going to have to pay a private corporation to get water out of your tap.
What I wanted to ask about them, I already called all of my representatives and was very emphatic about not having it fast-tracked and not having it passed at all. And I'm wondering, what else can we do?
Well, what you can do, you can write your local newspaper and say, why aren't you covering this more? Why aren't you showing who's behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Mm-hmm. Why aren't you showing that NAFTA failed? Why have you refused to go after NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization? We need none of those.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you should do now. Thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. And we have time for one more. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from John from New York City, and this actually came in while you were talking today, and he said, when in our history did we give all these entitlements to congressmen and senators and their families? Because as important as it is for us to maintain our human rights, he feels it's equally as important to get rid of the entitlements of the people that we elect into office. So what are your feelings on that?
I would absolutely agree with it. I believe that no legislator should be immune from prosecution. I believe that no one should be allowed to break the law on any level, including corporate members of corporations. Right now, a corporation can break the law and be fined or assess a penalty, but not the individuals who created that crime who are members of that corporation. I believe that Congress should be also held accountable. If you get us into a war, like the war in Iraq, based upon lies, you should be held accountable for crimes against humanity, including every legislator that voted for it. Why? They can say, well, I was told, no, you're supposed to know more than we are. You have access to more information than we do. You have access to the internal goings-on of the intelligence committees. And you have the staff that could get information to tell you whether or not this is the truth or not the truth. Plus, you have your own volition on this. You could either choose to do your homework, or you can choose not to and just be a party hack. And in this case, only a few handful of individuals of conscience who did their own homework, like Dennis Kucinich, for example, and Ron Paul and others, chose not to endorse a war. And as a result, they were right. Everyone else who voted for it was wrong. You make every member of Congress responsible for the laws that they pass that end up backfiring and hold them accountable, then you would have a whole different type of person becoming a member of Congress. Right now, to go to Congress means that you join a club. Now, it's an extremely exclusive club. If you do well, it's not in Congress where you'll make your money. It is who you're allowing access to you, how you support them in their legislative efforts, and what rewards you will get later in life. And that's why we have lotteries, why it takes $1 billion to get elected president. It'll take $100 million to get elected mayor of New York. You can't imagine how much the inducements corrupt people, even initially well-intentioned people. So we shouldn't allow them to have a double standard. There should only be one standard. If you're in the CIA and you break the law, the FBI and you break the law, you should go to jail. In fact, you should have a longer sentence if you're a person who knew better the law and had greater access to the impediments of breaking the law, and you chose to exceed that. And I believe that we should not treat our members of Congress, our legislators, any different than average citizens on every level. Hold them accountable. And if you did, we wouldn't be in the mess we are today. We would already have a foreclosure on all homes. We would have forgiven the student debt. We would have gotten out of the World Trade Organization, NAFTA and CAFTA. We wouldn't be entertaining corrupt laws like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We wouldn't be arresting people for drug crimes like using marijuana. We wouldn't have a police state. We wouldn't have fascism. And that's the consequence of when you allow the wrong people power, and all they're going to do is continue to use that power to their ends and means. Thanks for your call.
Okay.
We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen today. Let's say hello to Utrice Lees. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about a slew of pending legal cases that constitutionally challenge the president's overreach of power and that ultimately can flatline Obamacare.
Great. I'm interested in this. Utrice Lees, right now, please stay with us.